Tell me a story, Baba.
What story, my son?
About Okoye in the Dora Milaje.
Welcome back to Once Upon a Time in Wakanda. I'm Tyler.
I'm Bo.
I'm Aaron.
We're here today to talk about the Dora Milaje, the adored ones of Wakanda. And let me just tell y'all this, man. If there's one group I was most looking forward to seeing on the big screen, there are a lot of people I want to see in comic book lore, but if there's one group I'm most looking forward to, it is definitely the Dora Milaje, because they are so unique. The way that they've been introduced and kind of the mythology behind them is so rich, and it has connections to real life history in Africa as well, that the Dora Milaje were some of my most anticipated, really the most anticipated part of Black Panther outside of Wakanda for me. Would y'all agree?
It's a bold statement. It's a bold statement. Yes.
I mean, I don't really think there was anything else. I've already seen T'Challa. I haven't seen the Dora Milaje.
Yes, you have. Because of course exactly. They do show up in Civil War.
Yeah, but they didn't, not in garb. Like she was just
not in garb, but
she was just move or you will be moved.
That's a powerful line, especially in the way that it was delivered and at that moment. Because it was Wakanda being there without them being in Wakanda. That look that T'Challa kind of gives her and looks at Black Widow like, this would be interesting.
So you saw that. Obviously, Aaron, your introduction to Black Panther was Civil War, late pass to you, CP time. And so you saw that scene with one of the Dora Milaje. I believe that's Okoye, but they hadn't cast her in the full role. But it might be Ayo. Or Io. So I'm not exactly sure which one it is, but she walks up to Black Widow, says, "Move or you will be moved." What's your perception of the Dora Milaje based upon that scene?
Okay, so being the Wakanda neophyte that I am, the resident Wakanda neophyte. Hey man, I gotta admit, totally went over my head, man.
Yeah.
Totally went over my head. I missed it.
You just thought she was cool.
I missed it. I really did. I did not put two and two together. Totally went over my head.
Wow. If you think about it, it's such a countercultural idea to have a woman as the Kingsguard, the bodyguard, right? And so having this beautiful African woman standing in a dress in front of Black Widow and all her gear and what we know she's capable of, and T'Challa dignifying the fact that if she wanted to, yeah, you would be moved.
Yeah.
That's a powerful statement for the first introduction of the Dora Milaje on screen. And Bo, you know the Dora Milaje, you know some of the backstory. Were you excited by that? You were like, yes, I'm ready for this. I'm ready to see them in full garb. Or was it kind of just secondary to the overall Civil War point?
No, I mean, I think it adds to the vast tapestry that is Wakanda and to the film as a whole. You know, with the Dora Milaje being, there's almost kind of almost like a Green Lantern aspect of kind of this superheroic guardian, right. You know, this elite squad. I make the comparison to Green Lantern because the concept of the Dora Milaje seems as far removed from what we know is reality and what the norm is that it might as well be the Green Lantern Corps, this core of alien, you know, space alien, ring infused, galactic.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so
I see what you're saying for sure.
I thought that they may utilize the Dora Milaje to be more the way that the War Dogs are used both in the comics and in the movie.
So you didn't expect them to be a ceremonial?
No, I thought that they, especially because we first saw them outside of Wakanda, admittedly with T'Challa, I thought that was the idea, is that they were going to actually have a little bit more of a vaster role in Wakanda and in the way that it deals with the world, let's say, which was not the case. And so they kept a little bit more true, or very true to
the
comic book origins, which is great. So
did it live up to your expectations?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that the, you know, the ceremonial garb, I mean, it's like they walked directly off the page.
What about you, Aaron? Did you, once you saw them, you didn't know, you kind of got some hints from the trailers.
Uh-huh.
And then you see these beautiful women who are warriors. What is your first thought? What are your second thought?
Dude, look, I was amazed, yeah. man. And the way, the dignity, the way they walked, first of all, it's the way they teach us drill, for instance, like in the Marines. So,
military man.
You know, so like, you know, shoulders back, you know, it's just this authoritative, just confident, just presence that they had. But then there is also this skill that mm-hmm. is like, you know, like unparalleled, you know, and then not just skill for the sake of skill, but with this very specific duty to guard and to that T'Challa entrust his personal safety mm-hmm. to this guard, right? If that's accurate, right? I mean, they're basically absolutely. Like, you know, and so in my mind, I'm thinking,
Secret
man,
this Service, is, basically.
To see these strong, beautiful Black women as warriors. And I'm thinking like, man, this is up there with like, you know, this is like the Secret Service, man, you know, like the mystique yes. that's around right. in the Secret Service. Yes. It's like, you know, man, it was just blew me away.
You know, it's interesting because they command a level of authority that is almost akin to T'Challa because they exist to both protect him and kind of, you know, enact on his and Wakanda's behalf. I think specifically of when they land at the very introductory scene where they're actually pulling Nakia
yeah.
out of the her mission that she's in, and Okoye actually goes up and she's like, you will tell no one of this. And like, there's this intense moment yes. and like, these ladies have never seen this woman in their life,
yeah.
but the authority that she's commanding at that moment is very clear, followed by this comforting like smile, which kind of tells you like just that she's connecting on this emotional level, but it doesn't negate what she just said or the way that she just said it.
We have to talk about Okoye before we get into the origin of the Dora Milaje, because her portrayal, Danai Gurira's portrayal of this powerful, awesome general
yes.
was one of the highlights of the film. I know we keep saying that about everything, but it was one of the highlights of the film.
There were many
because
highlights.
It was so layered yeah. and it was strong and it was principled and it was caring. Mm-hmm. It was fierce, and you know she's not someone to be messed with.
That's right.
But at the same time, she had this commanding presence to where she at one point challenges T'Challa. And T'Challa has to basically put her in her place. As I know my duties as a king, but in reality, it's like, yeah, you know, we kind of side with her. You know, yeah,
I right. mean, you know what I love about that scene, her. Though, Tyler. You know what I love about that scene? He addresses her as general.
Right.
Right.
I thought that was very yes. profound. Yes. So even at a point of disagreement, he didn't just kind of like do like a positional power play.
Yes.
With her, like, I mean, I loved it whenever they addressed her as general. That was so cool. You know, and so anyway, keep going. But no, I thought that was very profound.
Absolutely. It was. I believe her character embodied so much that seeing her in the Infinity War trailer and seeing her run with all the Avengers, it's kind of like, oh, okay, just this random Dora Milaje. And then no, it's like, no, this is the general.
Like yes. she is the warrior of Wakanda.
Wow. And it's amazing to think about because the history of the Dora Milaje is fairly recent. So in the late 90s, Christopher Priest introduces the concept. And side note, I love Christopher Priest's run. It's my favorite run of Black Panther.
Mm.
No disrespect to Reginald Hudlin. No disrespect to Ta-Nehisi Coates or any of the other great writers who have written. But Christopher Priest's run, precisely because of what he introduces with the Dora Milaje, it adds so much layers, so many layers and so much texture to the story. And so the idea and the history is that Wakanda's tribes would send in some of their best young girls, and they would basically train to be the king's bodyguard and also the king's wife as well. One of them would be chosen to be the king's wife of a single Black Panther king. And so because they didn't know which one was going to be chosen, they all had to be trained to be lethal assassins. Now, T'Challa, to ease kind of some of these tribal tensions that were going on, T'Challa brings back the Dora Milaje. But it's interesting because he doesn't really intend to marry any of them.
No, he marries outside of Wakanda. Maybe that's another episode.
Yeah. And especially who he was dating, courting, and kind of the options that he had, it was very strange. Actually, that singular fact turns Nakia into Malice and turns her into the villain.
We'll get there one day, hopefully. Yeah,
we'll get there one day, maybe season two or something. But it's very fascinating to kind of see the ways in which T'Challa was able to bring it back and kind of remove the romantic element, which in some ways is wise because you don't want the people who are protecting you to feel slighted because you picked one of their comrades or their peers. And in another way, it's very interesting because he's kind of separating from the Wakandan tradition. He's bringing it back, but taking out what he wants.
Yeah.
And so Priest introduced them, and I think it's they're one of the best parts of the Marvel Comics universe.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I will say that I like how, and I mean, this kind of goes true universally. There's not very many creative licenses that the film took that I don't really love more than, you know, the source material. I can't think of anything actually that comes to mind at the moment. But this is another way, right? They took what was kind of even though it is new, something from the comics, a concept from the comics, and they pulled it off the paper, put it into real life, but also gave it very much more of a, I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about the whole Dora Milaje being groomed to be the queen aspect.
It's very
of that.
Strange. Yeah. Very, very, yeah.
Even for the 90s. That's
yes. Yeah, well, but I mean, that is the history, and right. That is the history of it. So I think to track the history is,
oh, absolutely.
Fine.
Absolutely.
To kind of continue to play that up is problematic.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Concubines and that whole idea.
Yeah,
very,
exactly.
Very backwards and regressive.
Therein lies, I think, and we kind of touched on this with M'Baku, but therein lies a bit of the challenge of bringing what are kind of problematic aspects, and this is true universally in comics, but especially when you've got characters that date back far beyond the Dora Milaje, you're going to end up having a lot of different aspects that you kind of have to get a little surgical in. But the Dora Milaje of the screen, ooh, man. Awesome.
So let's talk about some of our favorite scenes with them. You mentioned one when they kind of, when T'Challa came out, or actually, I think that was you, Bo. You mentioned just this whole idea of T'Challa coming off the spacecraft and getting Nakia out of that mission and seeing Okoye and being very regal. And then we see Okoye kind of commanding. It's hilarious because she's kind of smiling at the time when she signals them, and he's like, "Are you done?" And she's like, ah. And then she hits that the spear twice, and then they immediately turn. Nobody else is smiling. It's like, whoa. And I remember I was actually sitting next to my wife, and in the first time we saw the film, and she audibly reacted to that. She was like, "Wow," because it was the way in which the general commanded respect from the people who are part of the Dora Milaje and how they moved as one.
Yeah.
And then that awesome scene, and then I'll kick it to you guys, where they're facing off against Killmonger and she taps twice again and they hop in formation. Identically. I've watched it back 1,000 times, the GIF. They're all identical and they move just at the same time. It was just crazy to me to see that because I was like, wow. I mean, this is one of the most impressive things in a superhero film I've ever seen, to see them kind of together and the representation. What were some other scenes that you guys saw?
I just want to piggyback off of the fight scene with Killmonger because, you know, as a military guy, as a martial artist, one of the things that's so intriguing about the Dora Milaje is that they are the elite of the elite, right?
Right.
And the reason why I bring that up is because when you have elite military personnel, they're so highly trained that when one of them dies, or if more than one, it's like a surprise because you're so highly trained and you're so well versed in your art that death, like death is not an expectation. Like we don't, that means something went wrong. If you know that kind of mentality. And so in that scene where one of the Dora Milaje is lost, it was so jarring to me because when I saw them, that's the only thing that I could compare them to from my own life experience. They are an elite force. And so it was so jarring to see one of them lost in battle because you're thinking, wait a minute, that's not supposed to happen.
Right.
But yet even then, there was such honor and such fortitude.
Yes. Wakanda forever.
Wakanda forever. Mm. Man, it was like, I don't know. It was so, that part, again, just, you know, from someone that has a military background and just through different aspects of training and things like that, I was like, whoa, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
and to see death.
Very meaningful, honorable.
And we don't even know her name. We don't know that particular character's name.
Honorable, not wasted, just the...
Well, maybe Bo does.
Yeah, maybe Bo does.
Bo's like, her name.
And so where others... And then I'll say this too. So you're facing Killmonger.
Yeah.
You're facing the person that bested your king in combat. Mm-hmm. And yet they do it without hesitation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's without hesitation. It's coordinated. It's like...
That was crazy. That first move where she jumps on her back and jumps. Woo.
Yeah, I'll throw it to you, Bill. But for me, it was that scene.
No, all right. So when they're actually in the club in the casino,
yes.
And she's up on the. First of all, that shot, by the way, is incredible. When they actually pan from
the top down.
Well, actually, they go down top, if I'm not mistaken. Where?
Oh yeah, yeah. Where absolutely.
I think actually it's Nakia. She's fighting, and then it goes up, and then the rail blows out with her knocking somebody over, and she is twirling the spear around and everything, and she's got all of these people around her.
And she's taking it no problem.
No, absolutely no problems. And so like she, that scene in particular, that was also a very uniquely gorgeous scene because it took place in the quote real world, right? Like that was a fight in, even though, you know, it was in Korea, like it felt very familiar. And so like to see the characters that later on we would go see wearing more traditional garb to be wearing more superheroic garb in kind of civilian clothes, let's say like in disguise, that was great. The moment she grabs the wig and throws it at the dude.
Yeah. The iconic moment.
Brilliant.
Yeah. An iconic moment.
Brilliant.
And when you think about the way in which it wasn't just a neutralization, and this is where I think it connects to history, because historically there was, I believe it was the country of Benin in Africa, there were the Dahomey women, and the Dahomey women were the Amazonians. And so the
historic Amazonians.
Yes. And so people believe that the Amazonians of the Dahomeys were actually the inspiration for the Dora Milaje. And so they actually were suppressed right before the turn of the century, right before the 1900s. And so as we see kind of these connections to the brutality and the way in which they inspired fear in their enemies. They were actually known for beheading their enemies when they were fighting them. Like they were on the battlefield and they would always behead the people who they were fighting against and defeating. And so when you see that, it was a level of fierce that she took with Claw's people. It was a completely different level than what we had seen before. And it was almost like she can take it there in a way that I don't even think T'Challa was at the time, because he was just flipping guys. He was fighting them. But it was the way in which she used the spear, which is made of vibranium.
Right.
The way in which she used the spear to really send a message to her enemies that was like, you should fear us.
Can we just give Danai props, though, real quick? The coordination and the discipline, like the way that she carried out those moves, like being a big fan of martial arts movies and epic fight scenes, I can tell when like the actors in the fight scenes are slowing down or telegraphing. Sure. Like, you know, you could see that where there are kind of some breakdowns in that. Mm-hmm. This was martial arts ballet, man, when she was up on that balcony. I mean, just the coordination, her movements, they were crisp, they were technical. That was a phenomenal scene.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And so as we think about the Dora Milaje, there's also another group within the Dora Milaje, which is we're talking about how impressive they are, you know, the Midnight Angels. Bo, I would love to hear you talk about them because that's a different group. It's taking it to another level.
Yeah, so the Midnight Angels are not necessarily within the Dora Milaje. They are, and I could be incorrect on this, and I know this is kind of a, you know, you talk about Dora Milaje being a recent concept. The Midnight Angels are even more recent concept. Absolutely. But these are actually former Dora Milaje. The Midnight Angels are essentially superheroes within Wakanda. They kind of are vigilantes, you know, enacting justice amongst the streets where what would be the police force of Wakanda?
I don't think you really need one, bro. Like, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
like,
I guess that's where the Midnight Angels come in.
Because yeah, like what would be, do tribes police themselves? Like, I think that would be interesting.
There's Yeah, you got the Border Tribe, the Merchant Tribe, the River, maybe the River Tribe. Let's just say the River Tribe.
Okay,
I have no idea, but yeah. And so these were two women that actually they were Dora Milaje. They were actually in a relationship with one another,
yeah.
And due to events, they ended up being convicted of a crime and having to actually break out of prison, and then still wanting to pursue justice in their own way, became the Midnight Angels.
So Ayo and Anika are portrayed in Ta-Nehisi Coates' run, A Nation Under Our Feet. And it's very fascinating to hear and to see the ways in which they're critical of T'Challa and they're critical of authority, especially considering how much they love their country. So they love Wakanda, they love the people. And there's one scene, I believe it's in issue 2, where they're stopping a sexual assault. So a group of men are about to take advantage of some Wakandan women, and they're about to rape them and sexually assault them. And they use the term saving as like a substitute for like that sexual assault. And then Ayo or Anika, I forget which one, comes in and says, how are you going to save them when you can't save yourself? And she just like disarms them super quickly, you know? And it's crazy to see that the way the women looked up to them, I think is a microcosm of how Black women and young Black women in particular look up to the Dora Milaje as a concept of, wow, this is so empowering for us. And you inspire us to be more than where we are, to not settle for where society would place us.
So Ayo or Ayo, Ayo?
I feel like Ayo is too hip hop, so I'll just say Ayo.
All right, sounds good. Ayo.
Ayo.
So as a prevalent member of the Dora Milaje, and of course going on to be a member, or you know, one of
She was a captain at one point,
Midnight
I think.
Angels. She was a captain at one point, and you know, to kind of give a little course correction from earlier, she was actually the Dora Milaje that was in the Civil War, same actress that portrayed her here as well. So there was some pushback on the way that her character was portrayed in the movie because they did not really, you know, lean into her sexuality, which of course was kind of a big defining aspect of her character from the comics, you know, especially with her and her lover going on to be the Midnight Angels.
Right.
You know, so what do you guys think? I mean, like, was that a wasted opportunity to dive into this character to further diversity in the Black Panther?
You know, I think it's very interesting because, you know, Aaron hasn't seen it yet because I don't know why, but he hasn't seen Wonder Woman yet. And so as we think about,
hang on, Aaron, do you hate women?
No.
Let me say that again. Your girls are watching. Your ladies are listening for sure. So, I mean, as we think about Wonder Woman, there's I think elements of kind of an ambiguous nature of Themyscira, to where Gal Gadot very, you know, openly says that, yes, Wonder Woman would be either bisexual or lesbian. You know, there would be some sort of sexual, because there would be no men around, right? So there would be no idea of, you know, obviously, I don't know how reproduction goes and things of that nature, but that there would be women.
On the mascara?
Yeah, and which is, we can get into that. But the history of the comics, not getting into that, but the history of the comics. And so, you know, and so as we think about that, it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, because there wasn't really, like, I didn't see necessarily an open lesbian relationship, open gay relationship within the mascara. And it's weird to kind of see that people have kind of expected that of Black Panther. But I do agree that if you're going to portray that character, it makes sense that if someone is deciding to erase the LGBTQ connection, when that's central to the character's arc, that's a curious decision. Now, I also completely say that, hey, they have room and space to build the arc. So
that's what I was going to bring up. Do you think that there's room to
build it,
develop
in
that?
Part two or what have you? But it would be an unfortunate retcon to remove that if that's central to how the writers have thought of that character.
That would raise some clickbait articles right there.
Well, I mean, it has discussion. It even has in some ways already, because people have questioned, well, why did you, it, was this a plan? And then was it erased? Was it not seen as something that they could fit into the time frame? Was it cut? Well, what were these decisions? And so I think because of Black Panther being such a groundbreaking film,
right,
there's that pressure to kind of fit everything into one story.
Be all thanks to everyone.
But it must be said that this is, if it's removed, it is erasure from the character.
If I'm not mistaken, and I could be wrong here, but I think there has been talks of a deleted scene in which that is nodded towards. And I mean, like, you know, all right, so on a much larger scale. So The Last Jedi... the movie just came out. Like, there was a lot of flack in that. Well, there's a lot of flack for a lot of different reasons about that film. One of which is we were presented with this character of Snoke, and thought we were going to get his backstory, and then we never got it. But the reality is, if they had taken the time to tell his backstory, it wouldn't have necessarily gone with kind of the flow of the film. Like, there was kind of a story that was being told, and surprisingly, he was not really part of that story. More so, he was just kind of a tool for the story to move along, as opposed to it really being about him and kind of diving into who this character even was.
You know, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm trying to think, are there any LGBTQ characters in the MCU?
In the MCU?
Openly, that we know about? I'm not talking about
You're talking about the movies.
In the movies, yeah, just in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Are there any that we know about?
Well, some people say that Bucky and Cap would make a cute couple.
No, I know people have made that intimation
that there's
romantic, you know, angle, but there's a romantic angle between them. But I don't remember any.
Now that you say any. It, I...
And so it's like, wow, well, this is really interesting, you know, to think about, was Disney putting the brakes on because they say, man, this is maybe a little too barrier breaking. You know,
interesting.
Are they trying to preserve their investment? You know, because especially if there's a deleted scene, that's a question that they would definitely be thinking about and appealing to a particular audience of African Americans who would, you know, likely be more conservative than most. So it's kind of an unfortunate thing, but it's very interesting to kind of, you know, think about the ways in which that doesn't exist within the MCU currently.
Let me ask you something. What is the extent of the Dora Milaje in the comics? Like, is it a select group of 12? Is it like 5? Is it 20? Is it 100? Like, what, like, you know, if this is...
I don't think we know.
Because that's the thing. So I kind of went into this thinking that they were more of an army as opposed to kind of elite guard. And it got a little questionable at times, because at some point it looked like it was more of an elite guard, but near the end they looked like a, you know, a whole army, albeit kind of a smaller army, but still.
I think they're more of a battalion.
Okay.
I wouldn't consider them to be an army by any stretch, but I also wouldn't consider them to be 5 or 6 or even 12. I think they'd be more of like a battalion of warriors. Yeah. And so that raises some interesting questions about their extent, because it's really ambiguous. And much of what we know about Black Panther is open to interpretation. And so you can really play with some things based upon what the comics have given you. And I think based upon the fact that people don't even the biggest fans of Black Panther who have read Priest, who have read Hudlin, who have read Coates, I don't think they're going to make too much of a hay if there's an adjustment in the MCU moving forward to expand the Dora Milaje.
I don't think there would be that big of a pushback.
I think there should be, right? Like, all right, so it would not necessarily make too much sense for Wakanda in its previous state to have a large, massive army.
Well, I'm not saying there should be an army, well, but maybe let's say it's more than a battalion. Right, maybe it's multiple battalions.
Hear me out on this, though. So I'm going to make another Star Wars reference, right?
All right, here we go.
So we got the Jedi Knights of the Old Republic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that served a very specific purpose. Now, what that was is based off of a lot of different, you know, what was in the movie or what wasn't in the movie. But one way or the other, they were not an army. However, circumstances changed or were changed for them so that they then had to become an army.
Yeah.
I would be curious to know as Wakanda gets more exposed to the world and the world gets more exposed to Wakanda, if all of a sudden T'Challa is going to find himself in need of an expanded army. And if that's the case, the Dora Milaje going out and actually, you know, training new recruits and actually expanding that. And even that question, you know, in terms of, you know, okay, wait, now we're building up this army. Now we're, you know, like what's going on here? That could open up so many great stories.
Wow.
The other thing too is, and this kind of goes back to something from earlier, you know, they call her General, right? So I mentioned in an earlier episode that, you know, I've got daughters. I remember playing with my kids. We love playing pirates. And I called, I remember about a year ago, I was playing with my daughter and I called her captain. Like, oh, you're the captain of the ship. And we're playing, we're having a good time. And then all of a sudden she stops and she said, Daddy, girls can't be captain.
Wow.
And I thought, wait, what? I'm just, all of a sudden, I just feel like I failed here because I'm, you know, despite what was talked about earlier with princesses, we're kind of anti-princess in our house. Like, you know, like, you know, we've got the Wonder Woman and the Batgirl and the Storm, and we've got all of the action figures and, you know, the Doc McStuffins, her mom is a doctor. Like we're very much trying to, you know, build up these girls and make them realize that, you know, you are set up, ladies. You can do whatever it is you want to do. And to hear that, because I know she didn't get that from us, there's just so much culturally that's communicated to these young women that when you get a powerhouse, a force like the Dora Milaje, and as well as Shuri, other characters, other Nakia, heroes that we see, Nakia, but specifically the Dora Milaje, there's something about that kind of organized acceptance of this structure that exists that I think is so powerful. And when they called her General, it reminded me of that conversation with my daughter.
Because in Wakanda, it's normal.
Exactly.
That was one of the, you know, the impressions made on me that this elite force, these amazing, brilliant, empowered women, and not just the Dora Milaje, but we talked at length, you know, about Shuri, and just to see that it was like no one was surprised.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, there was no, you know, like, no, hey, that's just how we roll here. This is a part of everyday culture and you know, the lifestyle of Wakanda. That was pretty cool.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, male privilege is systemic, you know. And I mean, it's going to take a systemic shift. And I think what we see sometimes is we think of the films, and I think people overestimate what they consider to be progress within the context of American culture. So we see, oh, we elected our first African-American president. And so because of that, we've made a huge leap in race relations. Or we see a Black Panther, as someone foolishly said, oh, well, this racist country is going to give $200 million on an opening weekend to a Black Panther movie. And we take these little exceptions to the rule. We take these little exceptional situations and we tend to say, oh, well, you know, this is proof. This is proof that the problem isn't that bad. When in reality, it's far worse and more insidious than what we think.
Our organization is very diverse. See this picture with Carl and this other picture with Carl and look over there.
right. Exactly.
It's Carl.
Exactly. And so you see those types of things and you're like, man, how are we elevating and highlighting these exceptions? And so then there's this idea and mentality and movement that men are being suppressed and men aren't being spoken to. And there's reverse discrimination and reverse racism and all these different things that come from the idea that because I feel a certain way about one piece of art or about one position or about a singular athlete or about a singular celebrity, that thus I now am being oppressed.
when we have no idea what that looks like systemically. Yeah. And so I think as men, it's been very interesting, even as a Black man, to kind of go through this idea of pressing people on the idea of white supremacy and pressing people on the importance of a Black Panther film with an over 90% African or African-American cast. And yet at the same time, having to confront my own manhood, my complicity in male privilege and my complicity in the ways of making daughters like yours feel as though, oh, a woman can't be a captain. Yeah. And in many ways, we're all complicit in that. And we're all participatory in that. And so the Dora Milaje causes us to confront those things in, and also Shuri and also Nakia and also Queen Ramonda. They cause us to confront those things in very uncomfortable ways for us. And I think it's easy in the context of a Black Panther film, because this is something that I appreciate and enjoy. Harder in real life. Harder when you're the person who answers to the authority figure, who is now a woman, and you feel as though, oh, well, I think we can do it a little bit better. Or why are you doing it this way? Or Wakabi mansplaining to his woman in the throne room, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, that's what we did in the past. But, you know, I think we can do this. You know, and so it's just like, man, well, how and in what
even
ways
had his hand up and like,
yeah, he's like,
that
yeah.
is what we did in the past.
Yeah, that's what we did in the past. But, you know, stay in your place, you know, just do what he says.
Like just building that, like physically holding the bear. There was a lot going on, by the way, between those two characters.
Fascinating.
Like,
right?
Like the visual aspect, you know, like it was a literal battle of the sexes that you saw displayed in that fight sequence, right?
And but like, what should be noted is that the men needed rhinos to face up
right?
to Vidora Milaje because he had to call the rhinos because he knew, getting, and I mean T'Challa served. Was there too, but they were getting served and they needed some backup.
And in further that, even earlier in the film, T'Challa is going around jumping on cars wearing a full vibranium suit. She just had a spear.
Can we talk about that, bro?
Yeah.
That is one of the most iconic scenes. Mm. She is on top, on the hood of a car, with a red dress, bright red, kneeling down. And at the point where the car breaks apart and explodes, she grabs the spear and lands on the...
Yo,
what?
I held my breath. Again, I didn't know what was going to happen. So I'm like,
I mean, really?
Are we getting ready to lose this character right now? I mean, she's been amazing up until this point. And then the way she grabbed the spear... midair and then made that perfect 10 landing on what the car door, you know what I'm saying?
Man,
coming to this, like, you know, just kind of picturesque finish and stop. It was, yeah.
The impact reminded me a lot of in The Dark Knight when the Joker's truck makes like a complete up in the air flip and on, but and it's such a simple concept of just
that flip
over and land. But there is something about the reality of gravity that everybody can relate to. And so when she's doing that in such this perfect way, grabbing the spear and landing, and sticking that landing so perfectly and sliding down, of course, you do get your funny Marvel moment at the end.
Of course. I think that was appropriate humor.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that was appropriate humor.
I don't have a problem with Marvel humor, but that's a whole nother discussion.
Oh, no. Here we go. So as we move forward with the Dora Milaje, I need a series. I need... Amazon Prime, Netflix, I need something. And and it's really referenced as one of the young women who was at our Pass the Mic meetup in Pensacola when we saw it with a big group of people. She references The World of Wakanda and that series where she says the women are the backbone, the Dora Milaje are the backbone of the society. And so as you think about that, man, I would love to see the complexities because there's so much that's left up to interpretation, especially the way they feel about each other and the inner workings. You saw kind of the affection as one of them dies, as one of them is brutally killed with a smile. Like Killmonger executes her with a smile, which is insidious, but at the same time, you see the ways in which they were looking at her and kind of almost clutching their spears in a way that honored her sacrifice. You see that, you see the ways that they interact with each other, the power struggle, because you know there's a power struggle there, how hard it is to get in, rejected Dora Milaje,
We need that
we
series.
I'm just saying we need that series, yeah, man.
Absolutely. I'd be shocked if we did not see that coming to Netflix, a Netflix near you, the world of Wakanda. Just because there's so much that even the comic book did not get a chance to explore.
Right.
It didn't find its audience, so to speak. It did, but it wasn't the audience that Marvel wanted at the time. I think now they can justify that in a much larger way. Now, I got a question, though, because you talk about the challenges that exist for the Dora Milaje, and I'm especially curious from our host with some service behind him. In this movie, we see a huge power change, political power change in Wakanda. The Dora Milaje are sworn to serve the throne regardless of who's in it. That was like when Killmonger kills or presumably kills T'Challa. You look, they pan to Okoye. And I mean, she was just stone. But at the same time, you just saw it in her eyes. Like, she was standing strong in her position.
Man, that lip quiver, everything.
Ooh, man. So, and then we get the exchange later on, kind of diving deep into this. So I'm kind of curious, you know, as someone who's got some military experience.
That's such a great question.
You know, what do you like? What
are
is
you
it like?
Or Nakia, bro?
Yeah,
Okoye or Nakia.
Well, I don't want to put Aaron on the spot. I'm just saying.
Nah,
that, like,
you got to answer the question, bro.
and then let's just be honest. I mean, there's a cultural relevance.
Question. This is a very relevant question.
Very, very relevant.
Serve
right?
your country or save your country.
You know, and so she, when I think it was Shuri asked. Was it Shuri or was it Nakia? One of them asked, "What is there anything we can do?"
Well, I actually think.
Wow,
I think that was one of the Dora Milaje. Was it?
Oh, I think it was one of the
Dora Milaje.
So, is there anything we can do
during the actual trial?
When it became painfully clear that T'Challa's demise was inevitable, and so, man, and she adhering to. I think honoring the office, you know, but watch this though. In that moment,
okay,
watch this.
Okay.
Honoring the office, right? But in a way, playing a longer game. So her devotion to Wakanda superseded her devotion and whatever respect or affection she had for T'Challa.
And Wakabi, as we see later.
And Wakabi.
Yeah.
And so we see that her devotion to Wakanda kind of put her in some spots to where she had to make multiple sacrifices. The loss of a king that she respected and admired, and also the loss of a relationship. You know, and the reason why I bring that up is because she did that because maybe she recognized that her place, her maintaining her post. See, if she would have broken that line, then she would not have been able to come back from that. Right. And so her maintaining her post was for the good of Wakanda, as we saw played out later on. Right. And so,
yeah, I think when she saw T'Challa, it gave her that was the nudge. That was the last straw, because she knew that someone, I don't know, it's something about, it's one thing to oust a king, but it's another thing to oust a king and create a vacuum.
But if you
oust a king and you have a successor, if you oust a king, you back another horse.
Yeah.
Like, that's different.
Does that make sense, though, Bo?
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, so here's
the thing, and I want to make sure I'm answering your question too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so and actually, you're exactly right. And I hadn't really, I wasn't thinking for that scope. But certainly, she was, as she echoed several times over. She serves Wakanda, and so in serving the throne, she is then serving Wakanda. And to some extent, if you know the rules and traditions that are set up, if we just abandon those because we don't like what the current situation is, then we risk Wakanda, the very kind of fabric
Absolutely.
Of the society that we have that's holding everything together. Now, here's the thing, though. When the person sitting on that throne challenges that society, challenges the very thing that you're trying to protect, doesn't that put her in a position where she should stand in opposition?
It does. And let's see, I got to be careful how I say this now, right?
I mean, I get this. Because she doesn't know that he, I mean, I know we have a difference of opinion on this, and we'll talk about this in a future episode. But I mean, she doesn't know that he torched, you know, the heart-shaped herb, symbolically torching, you know, the line of secession.
I think she probably does. I think she
does. You think she does?
I think she does. Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
I think that would be a huge, I don't think that would be something you could hide.
Yeah.
But yeah, all right, so this is the way I see it. So you have Killmonger coming in, completely disrupting the way that things have been done in the past. He's doing away with tradition. He's doing away with public discourse. You know, he's brash. He's wiping out, and everybody's like, this isn't normal. This is different. Like, and so, you know, you almost wonder if she's like trying to rationalize this. Like, say she knows about the heart-shaped herb, but she's thinking like, okay, so this is the era in which the King of Wakanda declared that there would be no future Black Panther ruling. Wakanda. Like, you know, is she constantly trying to rationalize? At what point do you stop trying to rationalize the craziness that is leading your country and just say, somebody's got to step up and do something about
this? I think the breaking
point is, I'm talking about a movie, guys. Yeah. That's it. I'm not trying to talk about anything else.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we're just talking about a movie right now. That's it. Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you what, though. When the king elevates himself above the good of the people, when the king begins to enact policies and take a trajectory that will ultimately lead to the ruin of Wakanda, then even as you honor the office, you have to break ranks at that point. Like, you can't go down with that ship, because again, your commitment wasn't made to a man. Your commitment was made to the people that you serve, to the nation as a whole. And so there is a point to where
enemies, foreign and domestic.
Yeah, right. There's some tension. There's definitely some tension. But then there does come a point where I use an example historically, right? There was an attempt made on Adolf Hitler's life that did not come from without Germany, but came from within.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Because as some of those military leaders began to look, they began to recognize, okay, this is going to kill us. This is ruining our nation. Mm-hmm. This is not for the good of Germany. This is not serving a greater good. This is feeding into a greater evil. This is unjust. Mm-hmm. And they reached a breaking point that they actually tried to take Hitler out.
Right.
All right. They reached that breaking point, and their reason for that was it had to do with that. So anyway, I think that that's tension good. That served, that whenever you have these despotic figures that have risen up throughout human history, that initially they speak in a way to gain the support of the populace, like, we have your support, we're going to empower you. But in reality, that is a veneer, that masks a very self-serving, very selfish ambition that in the end doesn't serve the people, it just serves the person in office.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that's really good. I think the reason why
we walked that one right, did we do that one right?
No, I think that's really fascinating. But I think really the reason why Okoye didn't revolt on Killmonger was because T'Challa made a tactical error. That's just, he shouldn't have accepted the challenge. Point blank, period. He should not have done it. And T'Challa is challenged by Killmonger. He accepts the challenge without knowing who he's dealing with, and gets himself in trouble that they have to clean up. But so she wouldn't have had any rights to do that at that point, because then the Dora Milaje could have been disbanded. Who knows what could have happened? Because at that point, he was defeated in ritual combat that he accepted.
Yeah.
The rules that he got power,
which was
based
a rash
upon
decision.
Following the rules. And his mother said, don't accept this. And he's like, I accept your challenge. I don't know what he was trying to prove in that moment. I don't know what he felt. I don't know if he felt that people were going to turn on him if he refused to accept the challenge. But he had an option in that moment, and he decided to take the challenge. And so you can't expect the Black woman to come in and clean up when you didn't take care of your business. I'm just saying. See, I'm only talking about the movie.
If you're taking an overly idealistic approach to T'Challa's character, as if he could do no wrong, maybe someone would say, well, he made that decision because he recognized a wrong that was done against, you know, Killmonger. But I don't think that. I think he was in
that
his
ain't
feelings.
Playing the game.
I think he was in, his, feelings,
Yes.
And he had something to prove.
Yes, something
it
to
was
prove.
An ego play.
Ain't when he nobody going to come in my throne. Yo,
when he saw that ring around Killmonger's neck.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to do this.
You know what I'm saying? It was.
No, you not,
it
bro.
It was a rash effort.
You're going to get washed.
To prove yet again his superiority.
Absolutely.
It was pride, man, and it came before the fall.
I think it was foolish.
Sorry.
I think it was foolish.
No, that's great. I mean, like, but here's my question. Because I think this is something that I totally went over my head. I was under the impression that he actually did not have a choice in that moment. That, like, for him, if he was to refuse, that actually would cause dissension in a whole nother light. Because if I recall from, and correct me from the comics, there might be some basis for this.
Sure.
But based on what they laid out, you know, on challenge day, any of the tribes can challenge. But then if somebody of royal blood wants to challenge, they too can. And so it was separated specifically for that. And so I thought because in fact, didn't the river tribe dude, or maybe it was the merchant tribe lady, but somebody said specifically, you know, oh, you know, he's royal blood. He can do this. Like he is
within his right. But here's the difference. The difference was Killmonger makes a statement that proves that T'Challa was consumed with hubris. Killmonger says the entire nation doesn't have to be there. Just him and someone to get me out of these chains. Now, here's what T'Challa should have done. He should have accepted the challenge, but he should have put it off a few weeks because they said it's going to take us weeks to get the whole country together because that's what's supposed to happen. Then he could have set a plan place just in case he was overthrown, just in case he lost, that protected his family, that protected Adora Milaje, and protected their traditions. He decided not to do that. He wanted to get it over with.
That's good,
And just in the same way, he had the same mentality that Shuri did. And Shuri had this naive mentality. Oh, he stands no chance against T'Challa. Oh, yeah, you know. And so when T'Challa gets that first slice in, you're like, oh, okay, we know how this is going to end. No, it's not.
Right.
He underestimated his opponent. And so that's why I think T'Challa made a foolish decision.
Yeah.
He could have set up a safeguard. Be wise. Say, yes, I'll accept your challenge, but I'm not going to flaunt our... He let someone come in and flaunt for tradition. He let someone use it and flaunt it at the same time.
Yeah.
I challenge you, but the whole country does. Yes, they do have to be there.
You know, that whole scene, honestly, not to jump universes again, but that was Bane and Batman on that bridge.
Ah.
Like, you're thinking, oh, you think you're just going to shake yourself and come down here? You have no idea. There's been this obsession. There has been this preparation. Like, you don't understand. For instance, Killmonger, you know, basically said, like, you have no idea. I've been preparing for this my whole life.
Right, right.
I don't need a few weeks. Like it was an obsession, and it was grossly underestimated. So anyway, we're talking about Adora Milaje, but I mean, it was.
You really adapted the doctor. You are so. Victory has defeated you.
It was a tactical error.
If you make a calculation, I beat the best warrior in the kingdom other than myself in M'Baku. This guy isn't better than M'Baku. You know, I think he doesn't know the weapons. He doesn't know the terrain, but it was the rage and it was the passion that won out in the end in that battle. In the second battle, he used a little bit more ingenuity and smarts and kind of used the Wakandan tech against Killmonger to eventually disarm him and win.
Hmm.
But the reality was, T'Challa made a mistake, man. And so, as is the case, you know, the women had to come in and clean up with a mistake that the dude made. I mean, it's typically the case. I'm just talking about the movie.
But the tension that she carried, even in her, in that, as she witnessed the defeat of T'Challa. But then when Nakia assumed that she would come with, she was like, I'm not going anywhere. You know, and you can see that she wasn't wimping out. It wasn't that she was afraid.
It was the principles.
She was standing on principle in that moment, which ended up being a saving factor, you know, for everybody in the end.
If she had left with her in that moment, I don't think
I don't think they have, I mean, maybe they appoint a new general, maybe something else happens, maybe it all works out, but I see.
Or maybe they would follow her.
Yeah. But I just see a very, I see it being a different outcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the way it turned out, I think was mainly T'Challa's fault, but it was a perfect storm. And Vidora Milaje, man, I'm just saying all these tensions and the tension of honor and how they're trained, that should be explored in a follow-up TV series.
Yes.
World of Wakanda coming to Netflix sometime.
Somebody do it.
2020.
We got to do it, man. So we'll see you guys next time. Thank you guys for tuning in. And we'll get it in again. Once Upon a Time in Wakanda.
Once Upon a Time in Wakanda is brought to you by The Witness, a Black Christian collective, and produced by Podastery Studios. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out the entire first season, now available at wakandapodcast.com. And keep the discussion going by following us on Twitter at Wakanda Podcast.